Our society has a big problem, men's violence against women and girls, domestic violence, sexual assault, harassment that expresses or even just threatens violence. All of these are manifestations of this problem. And underlying each of these variations of male violence against females is a male quest for power and control over women. The statistics convey the scope of the problem. The National Center for Injury Prevention and Control reports that nearly 5 million women experience partner-related physical assaults each year. The National Crime Victimization Survey estimates that nearly 250,000 girls and women are the victims of sexual assault each year. Men, of course, are not the only perpetrators of violence against females, and women and girls are not the only victims of male violence. Believe me, I get this. I have experience as a victim of male violence. But the reality is that the number of female perpetrators pales in comparison to the number of male perpetrators. This is why the focus of the sermon today is on stopping male violence against females. I am not condoning other forms of violence, but I'm focusing on the form that happens well over 90% of the time in domestic settings and in sexual assaults. Women in the room, it is good to have you here today. Clearly, this is a problem that impacts far too many women. And without a doubt, there are women in the room today who have been victimized by male violence. As the statistics powerfully show, this is a pervasive problem. It's not confined to a particular class or a particular ethnic group or any other division like that. Violence can happen to any woman or girl in our society. But the sermon today is really primarily intended for men. And it's intended not just for the small percentage of men who are perpetrators of violence, but also for the well-meaning men who never, ever would lift a hand in violence against a woman or a girl. I believe that well-meaning men are a part of the problem. And we are part of the problem when we remain silent in the face of violence from other men. We're part of the problem when our words or actions reinforce the sexism that is the foundation of male violence against females. We are part of the problem when we are silent, when other men treat women as objects. We are part of the problem when we don't teach our boys to view and treat women as full human beings with every bit as much dignity and worth as males. And we are part of the problem when we don't help our boys reject the societal norms that define a real man in this very narrow, confining way, things like emotionally disconnected, tough. When we let our boys think that's what a real man is, then we're part of the problem. And men, we do have a problem. And the solution to this problem does not rest primarily with women. Brave and dedicated women have been on the front lines to stop violence against women and girls for a long, long time. As Shannon suggested, it is time for men, all men, to step up and be part of the solution. It's time that we own that stopping violence against women and girls is on our plate. It's time to commit ourselves to helping to end this violence.
I was awakened by a commotion. There was lights coming from down the hallway. I rolled my sleepy 9-year-old body out of bed and staggered towards the light. I saw my parents talking to my half-sister, who's crying and holding my baby nephew. I could see she had a black eye and a swollen face. I heard her say something about him getting really drunk and hitting her. Something about it being her fault because she shouldn't have made him angry. Then everybody noticed I was in the room and I was shuffled off to bed. Unfortunately, my family has direct experience with violence against women. And even more unfortunate is the fact that this incident was not isolated. It continued on for years. But the impression that 9-year-old took away that night is more important for today's topic. I grew up assuming violence against women was just another part of life. Of course, it wasn't condoned in my family, but to a 9-year-old mind, violence against women was, quote, justified as part of the fabric of life by such statements as, he just drank too much and lost his temper. Or, she shouldn't have done that. She knows it makes him mad. Or, well, she's no angel. Maybe she does some things that fuel the situation. The violence my half-sister experienced was positioned as a question of blame rather than absolute abhorrence. Think about it. Would we ever sit around and talk about something like murder with such statements like that? Why is it acceptable to do this when it involves violence against women? As Roger said, we're part of the problem when we don't teach our boys to view and treat women as full human beings with as much inherent dignity and worth as men. Roger also pointed out the danger of not helping our boys question and reject the societal norms and to find a real man as always being tough and emotionally disconnected. I want to share a story with you today about how I saw this play out. Last year, I did a community service kind of mini internship at Harbor House, part of my student ministry. My assignment was simply to be a positive male role model for the children and their mothers. I was at the shelter about 8 hours a week, and these were consecutive weekends, so I got to know them pretty well. I'd like to tell you about one boy. I call him Dan, and I've changed a few of the identifying information details to protect his mother. Dan was the type of boy Harbor House had in mind when they agreed to my internship. They suspected he had lived his entire life in shelters of one form or another. He was a preteen, and surprisingly, he was getting perfect grades in school. But he was tough and strong and aggressive kid. And he was very prone to getting into fights. Football and professional wrestling were his passions. But he also suffered from depression and had attempted suicide the month before I arrived. The staff felt an adult male role model would help him. Now, I was very unsure if I was going to connect with Dan. Since football and wrestling had never been a big part of my life, my anxiety shot up the moment I was introduced to him and his face lit up and he ran off to go get his football to play catch. My immediate thought was, oh, great. I never learned how to throw a football properly. He's going to reject me right away. So before we started playing, I decided honesty is the best policy, and I said I let Dan know I needed him to teach me about football. No, I didn't let him know I do know how the game is played. I just never learned how to throw a perfect spiral. So it seemed to work. He carefully explained how we were going to play, and he even gave me his secret to throwing a good pass. Our connection was established and grew as we spent time over the months watching football games. Every Sunday afternoon, I go down there and watch the Packers, although he was more of a Minnesota fan. We played computer-simulated wrestling matches and even tried out some moves a bit ourselves. To an observer, Dan and I probably looked like a father and a son roughhousing, but I quickly caught a glimpse of the violent world that was so prevalent in Dan's life. Every time I would begin to play with him, and sort of, you know, you get an advantage and you're the adults, so you're supposed to let him win, But when I would get the advantage, he would become more physical with me than any other child I had ever worked with. And I have two kids. Once he punched me so hard I bruised. Another time I had to forcefully remove a chokehold that he had on me because I actually was choking. At other times he was going to act like he was going to kick me in the crotch. And it astonished me how quickly Dan would become violent. But we were just playing. It's at these times I really understood why the staff at Harbor House wanted me to hang out with him. He needed to see men reacting in non-violent ways to situations that would normally set him off. He needed to see there was another way. The most striking moment of our 2 months together occurred one night when he was reminded by the staff that he needed to read 20 minutes a day for school before we could play. He willingly accepted it and asked me to go with him to this small room at Harbor House they call the library, containing a small collection of donated books. Dan insisted that I sit in the big overstuffed chair in the corner while he went to grab one of his favorite books. It was Green Eggs and Ham by Dr. Seuss. Now, even though there was very little room in the chair left for Dan, he wedged his thin little body in very close to me. I put my arm around him, and he started to read. And it immediately occurred to me, Dan probably never in his life had a male relate to him in such a caring and attentive way. As he read the familiar book, my thoughts began to wander. I kind of thought, you know, I hope he's treasuring this moment as much as I am and would use it as a model of right behavior. The book was a great metaphor for Dan. Would he someday remember the message about the main character being stuck in a negative mindset and not willing to consider alternatives? Would he choose to empower himself to rise above the violent men he's grown up around? I certainly hope so that day. When Dan and his mom found housing and were moving out of the shelter, he insisted he have my phone number and get together again. So I talked to the volunteer coordinator about that because I thought that was probably a little outside of the norm. She felt Dan was probably more likely to call me for support than the staff at Harbor House. Now, although she was concerned about respecting boundaries, she agreed to let me set up a way he could contact me. I never heard from Dan again, but I did see him and his mother and little sisters from a distance one day changing buses downtown. Dan was leading the family, and I was really proud. I thought maybe he learned to be what it takes to be a positive male. Then later, I ran into the children's advocate from Harbor House last fall. She let me know that Dan had become involved in a fight with another boy at school and beat up the other boy so badly that Dan was probably going to be locked up for a while. My heart sank at the news. I'd been naive enough to think that my short time with Dan would cause him to overcome his years of violent experience and the stereotype tough guy image that he held and that he received constantly from the society outside of Harbor House. Which brings me back to my half-sister, where we started. I actually hadn't thought about her story until I started Harbor House training. After learning how complicated the issue of domestic violence can be and how society's attitude actually enables it, I've been haunted by how our family handled my half-sister's very tragic situation and then a conversation I had with my father a few years before his death. Now, my half-sister eventually did leave her abuser with my four nieces and nephews. And at this point, my father's health was beginning to fail, so he moved in with them to help them out financially, pay the bills, in exchange for them kind of helping to care for him physically. This is when my father discovered that his daughter's low self-esteem had led to some pretty serious substance abuse problems, and she actually had become verbally abusive herself to some of her own children. In fact, one night it was so bad, my father fled the house with the kids to her ex-husband's house until he could find an alternative. He actually turned on her and took sides with her former perpetrator. This was just another stage of a very nasty downward spiral for my half-sister. As you can see, domestic violence is a very complicated issue. Often the victim becomes the perpetrator, and it's difficult to remember the inherent worth and dignity of everyone involved. Near the end of my father's life, we were discussing one day his attempts to intervene in my half-sister's very sad life. At one point, he turned to me and said, "She never should have been born. She never should have been born." I was completely dumbstruck. Here was my half-sister's father putting all the blame for the ruined lives in our family clearly on her shoulders. I didn't respond. I had no idea what to say. I had completely lost my voice. He's been gone over a decade now, and I've always regretted that I didn't say something at that time to help him understand that my half-sister did have inherent dignity and worth. I feel like I helped perpetuate the attitude that she deserved it by not speaking up.
The local organization Voices of Men is all about men finding their voices and speaking up. In my own life, I have way too many stories like the one Jim just told. And I suspect a lot of men in here can think of times when we have been silent. Our silence condones violence. Buying into the sexism of our culture condones violence. And we need to find our voice. We need to speak and act in ways that convey to men that violence against women is just not acceptable. We need to live our lives in ways that value women and challenge sexism. The choice of how we respond to this issue really is pretty simple. As men, we can either perpetrate the violence, stand by silently as it happens, or roll up our sleeves and work to end it. So what can we men do? And again, here I'm talking to the men in the room. What can we do to stop violence against females? It'd be great if we could all work 8 hours a week at a shelter, like Jim. But I suspect that's maybe not possible for a lot of us. But don't worry. There are other things we can do. One is to join Voices of Men. This organization is really a pioneer in both our state and really in the country. And if you don't want to join Voices of Men, take the pledge that Voices of Men has created. The pledge is one sentence. I pledge never to commit, condone, or remain silent about men's violence against women and girls. It's really easy to take this pledge if you want. You can go to the Voices of Men website, which is voicesofmen.org, I think. And you can see the names there, too, of Fox Valley men who have taken this pledge. The very first name on the list is a fellowship member, so are a bunch of others. And then, of course, fulfill the pledge. It's not just words. Second thing is to keep our eyes open and to speak up when we think violence might be happening. As Tony Porter, who's a real pioneer in this movement, points out, the men who perpetrate violence against women are counting on the well-meaning men to stay silent. They are counting on us just to mind our own business. Violence against women and girls is our business, and we need to speak out against it, and we need to hold men accountable who perpetrate violence. Number three, speak up when other men demean females. You know, the sexist joke, the "you play like a girl," those kind of comments are part of what creates sexism and what objectifies women. from pornography to media advertising that uses women's bodies to sell products, all that is part of the problem, and we need to speak out against that and disconnect from it. Number four, we can redefine masculinity in the way we live our lives. Masculinity should include being in touch with emotions. It should include valuing girls and women and not treating them as objects. And this rigid kind of narrow view of the male role reinforces the devaluing of women, and so does homophobia. Number five, be a positive role model for boys. Our boys need to see men valuing women and speaking out against sexism and violence. It's the only way they'll learn. I was really chagrined when I walked into the Voices of Men breakfast a couple months ago and realized I had never talked to my son about the group, let alone invited him to the breakfast. And my son is 18. What a missed opportunity. And finally, on my short list is number six, which is to support the agencies that are working in the trenches to help women and girls who have been victimized by male violence and are working to end such violence. Shannon listed the ones in our area, including the Christine Ann Center, Harbor House, the Sexual Assault Crisis Center, and Reach Counseling. All of these agencies need financial and organizational support. A lot of them need male volunteers. Check with them. See what you might do. Maybe it's not 8 hours a week. Maybe it's just one or two a month, but it could make a difference. And I have a dream that one day all of these agencies in our area will shut their doors because there are no more people being victimized by violence. They'll shut their doors because violence against women and girls has been eliminated. And then both men and women will be gentle. And then both women and men will be strong. I can't make this happen on my own, but I can be part of the solution, and so can you.